Hello, everybody. We are back with Work at Life. I am Maddie Grant. I'm a culture designer at Propel, and I'm here with Sonia Lucina, and I will invite her to introduce herself in just a minute. And we have a very cool special guest today. But just to give you the spiel, our podcast, Work at Life, is all about the gray area between work and life. And because we're very invested and passionate about people being fulfilled in the workplace, those are the topics that we're trying to dig into a little bit. And specifically for this season of Work at Life, we are talking about the first female recession, which is a big deal and not a good thing. And so we have some specific topics coming out of that overall umbrella. So I'm going to turn it over to Sonia.
Thanks, Maddie. Hey, everybody. It's so great to be here with you again today. I'm Sonia Lucina. I'm an organizational psychologist, and much like Maddie, my passion in life is just to make people happier, work more engaged, create better organizational cultures. And oh yeah, I'm the president of the Workforce Business Unit at Question Pro. And Maddie mentioned that we have a special guest today, and we do. She's like one of my favorite humans in the whole world, my college roommate, one of my best friends for life, Kelly Wilson. She is an organizational behavior psychologist. Cal, you'll correct me if I butcher that at all. She's a professor at Purdue University and just somebody whose work I have followed very closely since college. And she's done just some incredible research around work and family and so many things that have always been so relevant just for people in general, but wow, so much more important even in the last year for us to really take in. And so when Maddie and I had an opportunity to chat with Kelly recently, we were just so thrilled at the information that she shared with us and the insights. And Cal, welcome to the show again. It is such a
Yes, welcome.
privilege, pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, I'm excited to be here, and it's awesome how, yes, we became, best friends in college and then, went on to similar grad school experiences, but then I stayed in academia and you now are in industry, and it's cool to see how our careers are still, overlapping, and it's been great to work with you and do some work things together over the past few months. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. Oh, it's a pleasure. And hopefully this is one of the many ways, many, many times we'll have an opportunity to share things together. And I know when in our recent conversation, you had recently published an article in Harvard Business Review. And it's one of my favorite publications. For anybody that listens to this podcast knows that, like, probably every show I mention at least some research from there. So of course, when something came for me, I was like, oh, we have to talk about it. And I went through, and I don't know how many times I read the article and underlined so many different things. And to kick off our time today, there was really, one of the many findings that I just think is incredible, but I think it's a great starting point. And it said that in the research that you all did, while nearly 100% of managers rated themselves as supportive of employees with families, only half of their subordinates agreed with that assessment. And to me, it was one of those findings that it just took me aback, because we know by and far how much people have cared about their teams over the last year and a half now, and even before, but especially now that we were measuring it with such a magnifying glass and understanding how people are doing. And so, in many ways, one of the really, I guess, surprising things and unfortunate things is that from in many ways, we see the managers do care. They feel like they're doing their best, but there is a miss. Like, probably if you ask them, they say, yes, I care about my employees and I'm doing so much. But in all of that, there's this tremendous opportunity to really understand better what is it that their people need and what is it that they're looking for and how can they show up even better in an even more meaningful way. So do you mind, elaborating a little bit on that finding? And I mean, you shared so many amazing insights when we were debriefing before this podcast. So kick it off with any one of the ones you want, and then we'll roll, rock and roll
Sounds
with
great.
them.
Sounds great. Well, this is one of my favorite areas that I've really been focusing on for about the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years. You know, in my field, we kind of call it agreement, but looking at this agreement between managers or leaders and their employees about their relationship, about different aspects of, you know, the quality of their relationship and asking these questions. And, you know, so there is, so good news, right? There's always like a, you know, a substantial portion that have agreement, right? It's not that, but there's also this significant proportion that, you know, don't agree or don't see eye to eye. And we mentioned that in our HBR. And so if it is about, you know, half, you know, it depends on the industry and the sample, you know, why is that? And so a lot of research is starting to dig into that. And I'm curious, you know, maybe it's the size of the team, right? It depends on who you're asking. If some managers have huge teams, how could they truly have, you know, great relationships with everyone? Or what that might be. And maybe they're just not asking the right questions, right? And so that's something we all talked about when we were prepping for this is, you know, they think they're being supportive or they think they're being, you know, a great manager, but maybe they're not asking the right questions and everybody's different. So different questions for different employees. So, you know, I'd say the research is just kind of starting there and I'm really excited about it. And there's several people in the field that are really excited about it. But, and I'm curious now how like, you know, COVID has changed that and moving to so much remote work, you know, where there is less interaction, is it going to be, you know, and adjusting to that? So how that's changing and how we'll continue to evolve as this plays out. So it was cool to be able to bring that, you know, into our article. And I have to give a shout out to my senior colleague, Ellen Kosick, who led the HBR and gave me this great opportunity. And one of our students, Lindsay, was on the piece as well. And so we had a lot of fun being able during lockdown to sit and really think about how our research could lead to recommendations for managers and really trying to, I do the research, but I also, you know, teach and want to share recommendations for those going out into the workforce or those who are in the workforce.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually just did a webinar yesterday all about returning to the workplace, and it was about key cultural decisions you need to make, you know, when you're thinking about whether to return or not, or, you know, how many people, et cetera, or, you know, whether you are going to change your workplace and all that kind of stuff. But there was a lot about understanding the needs of your employees or designing your workplace around the needs of your employees, which was always, you know, an ideal before, but now it's like you cannot not do it because your people will leave if they can't, you know, work how they want. But part of that I think is very related to this conversation in the sense that if you are designing your workplace or your just return to work around the needs of the employees, that requires that you're asking them what their needs are. Right? That's kind of basic, but hello, you know, that's not something that, you know, organizations necessarily know how to do very well.
Yeah. And that's what we were talking about last time. I think with all of our backgrounds, I know I had, maybe it was too little later than I wish, but like aha moment around, I know this area better than the average person because I'm an organizational psychologist and I study this for a living. And it was maybe very naive of me to think or to expect managers, leaders, and organizations to have as much expertise, to your point, Maddie, to know what to ask and to know, like, what are the expectations? How should I be shaping the workplace? I think for the three of us, because it's what we live and breathe every day, sometimes you think that intuitively organizations would be going down a specific path of asking these questions. And what we're seeing is that they're not. And what we're seeing today is even some of the most engaged organizations, some of the organizations that have done the most work in this area are still looking around and asking around, what should I be asking my employees? What should I be finding out about? And so that brings us to one of the first stats that we asked in preparation to this episode that actually was a bit of a head scratcher for all three of us. So there's a ton, and Maddie, you were just mentioning the webinar, you did a ton of conversations around going back to the work, you know, to the office. And more often than not, research is saying people really want flexibility. People really want to be working from home. And we asked people how do you prefer to have meetings with your managers post-COVID? And we actually asked this in a number of different ways, because the first time we saw, you know, is most people sat in person. And so we thought, oh, could that really be? It seems, you know, so many people are asking for this flexibility. You know, maybe some people don't have an opportunity to, you know, work from home. So we added that as an option, and that wasn't it. Most people said, yes, I have an opportunity to, you know, have these meetings remotely, but I would rather have them in person. And so we started to peel that back a little bit, like, what could that possibly mean? And a couple of things that, you know, we mentioned that were interesting, and, you know, we can debate them a little bit, is one, that maybe so many individuals that didn't have a chance to meet with their manager or their leader in person for so long are now eager to, but maybe in a way that we, you know, when you're thinking about what kind of research do you do over time, it could be great to understand, one, is this the case for your organization or most of your people that, you know, what are falling in the 22% of our bucket that says no, remote is fine. What is your organization? What does your culture look like? How is that going to change maybe in a quarter? Because maybe so many people miss each other, miss these in-person meetings, think, you know, there was all this magic and all this magic is going to happen when we're together. And you start to see your leader in person and you realize, well, wait a minute. No, like I'm, you know, have this big commute and I'm not getting to some of the things to be in the office. And actually, we're just as effective doing this remotely. So that's one of the things of saying, you know, ask something once now, but don't have, like, never ask it again, because people will change their mind. Their experiences will be different. And the other thing that really ties, you know, back to the, you know, first female recession and really the theme of this season is that there are some people who are concerned that if they maybe work from home more often than their colleagues, that that is going to have negative impact on their promotions and their pay raises. You know, the idea of maybe out of sight, out of mind, how is that going to play a part? And what we've seen in research, again, is that more often than not, it will be working mothers who would choose to work from home because there are just some other things that fall under more traditionally out of their responsibilities that would be easier to take care of if they didn't have to commute. And so to really be mindful of that and really set up your managers to lead by example when it comes to, you know, going into the office, doing specific things. And Cal, one of the things that we can talk about a little bit is that your research outlined really well is setting the right expectations and expectations around hours being in the office, expectations around when flexibility is important. How do you introduce like flexible flexibility, I think it was called, but to really peel back some of this, like if people are saying in person, is it because it's really a preference, because they enjoy being around somebody else? Is it out of fear that they're going to be penalized if they don't show up? And so really understand what is it, what is the preference in your organization? Why? And then being able to measure that over time to see as the world evolves, as people's experiences, preferences change, where does a person land maybe after 2 months, 3 months, et cetera? But Cal, I don't know if you want to share a little bit around, you know, even going back to work or some of the research you did for COVID, what did you find that was effective for, especially for working parents?
Right. So great question. So from my own research, I did collect some data during COVID that we're currently kind of finalizing. And we found, but this was for both men and women, that uncertainty at work, about work, and uncertainty about the family and how, you know, things are going to be managed. And, you know, that we know that's stressful and it's leading to these, your podcast and one of my main areas of research is kind of the dynamics between work and non-work, work and family, work and life. You know, this kind of, you say the gray area. Yes. So this is leading to people having to cope with those stressors in different ways. And so some of my research that hopefully we'll start writing later this summer and try to get out this year is looking at those different strategies of how people and, you know, especially, you know, parents or family members or whatever, even single employees were included in our research, are coping, different strategies, how they're, are they planning out things, right? Or are they relying on others by seeking support, right? Emotional support, instrumental support, trying to get help from others. Or are they using cognitive tricks to reframe it you know, in a positive way, the bright side of all this, and what they're kind of learning or how they're growing from it. And so we're looking at these different strategies. And so hopefully we'll have more on that soon. But this is related to some research that I wanted to mention that I did not conduct, but great people at the University of Georgia, Kristen Shockley and her co-authors have a piece that just came out in one of our top journals called the Journal of Applied Psychology. They did a whole special call for papers on COVID, and they did an expedited process for those. And I believe, but don't quote me on this, I believe they're making these articles free for anyone to check out and read. But they were looking at, so they primarily, you mentioned how, you know, your topic this season is on the female recession, and that aligns with like McKinsey's report in the spring on how, you know, COVID-19 set back women's careers the most in different ways, but especially women with children under the age of 10. And the reason I bring up Kristen's work is because they studied dual earner couples with at least one child under the age of 6 during COVID. And they were looking at the different strategies of how these couples, where both the husband and wife were working, how they managed their work and their family responsibilities. And what was, you know, some as expected fell into kind of traditional roles where the woman did all the childcare or most of it. But, and so that was over 35% of the couples, but over 40% of the couples did a more egalitarian way. And so it was like shifting, alternating days. So, you know, the mother would work one day, the father would work another day, or mini shifts. One would work in the morning, one would work in the afternoon. I think that aligns with our core hours idea from our HBR, is setting core hours where at least for this couple of hours, this employee is going to be available and the team is going to be available if they need to like collaborate, right? Mm-hmm. And then working alternate hours, whether that's late into the night or early in the morning, or switching those shifts depending on the need of you know, the family and the different work dynamics. So it was really interesting to see kind of some of these new strategies emerge. And not just during COVID, it could align when, you know, somebody's sick and has to be home, and so a parent has to stay home, or, you know, elder care things that we're talking about more, you know, all kinds of different family or personal demands that require some flexibility from work. And so I think that's, you know, that's some interesting things. And so tying it back to, you know, managers being aware of, I think one thing I've been saying that Kristen and her, you know, a lot of us in the field are saying, is when a manager is working with an employee and they're trying to support them and their non-work life, they're probably impacting a lot more people than just the employee. It's if this person has, you know, a partner who also works, the decisions on flexibility is also maybe supporting that person or not, right? And so it's interesting about thinking about it a little bit more broadly than beyond maybe just the traditional way we usually do in the United States, is just your employees and my workforce, right?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing I'm taking away.
Yeah. Talk about people who can't work remote too, because that was an interesting piece of this.
Right. So some people, you know, couldn't work remote even during COVID times and had to report, right? Mm-hmm. And so they were finding that I think one of the categories where the women were most stressed, most distressed, and it was impacting their job performance were where they were doing it all, because their husbands had to go to work. So they were, but they could work remote. So then they were doing it all at home. And so so thinking more broadly, like, could there be any flexibility? So yes, he had to show up, but did it have to be, you know, for 8 hours a day or every single day? Like, is there some flexibility there that, you know, organizations could do? And switching with other coworkers, like, you know, switching times and having, you know, a buddy, as we called it, or someone else to help fill in when you maybe need to take a break. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, because again, as we hopefully are getting out of COVID, for all of these things that we learned, where we said, well, no, but it's just easier for somebody to be, if you physically have to be there for a specific set of hours, but easier for who? And what is that trade-off? You know, and I completely agree that there's some, the controlled flexibility is essential, because I know for as long as I've been a leader or had teams, I try to give my teams flexibility, but I've had conversations where I'm like, you know, can you please at least come in by 10? Because I need to count it. You know, sometimes things are going to come up, and if I have no idea when you're going to show up, it makes it a lot, you know, more difficult for me. You don't have to be here at 8 if you're not totally a morning person, but I need some kind of awareness, you know, around time. And so it's really negotiating that what's truly a win-win for the organization and the person. And I know we've talked about it, Maddie, you and I have shared a stat before in one of our earlier shows that 75% of people based on data we collected in the US are currently open to work, open to new opportunities. And that's people who are employed full time. And 42% of people are actively looking. And since we saw that, I think there's been almost like an explosion of headlines that are announcing this, you know, potential doom and exodus. And so it's not a scare tactic. I don't want it to be a scare tactic for organizations, but I do think it's really important in understanding that flexibility and understanding that some of the rules that existed inside organizations and inside a culture was done maybe with the favorability of the organization in mind and not so much a person, but it's just things have always been done that way. So there wasn't as much of a need to change. And today there probably will be, I think, both for just the well-being and the good of the individual. But I think it'll also be really critical for organizations if you do want to keep your best people, just because of all the changes that we're seeing, even in the media that are happening globally. So it's not, I think it's becoming a lot less of a nice to do and much more of a must do as time goes on.
The piece of that is that it's nuanced and it's not one size fits all, right? Like every organization, I think I can generalize, we'll have some people who want to come back, some people who want to stay remote all the time, and some people who want, you know, a mix of both. And so, you know, how you accommodate being flexible and aware of these different needs for different people is another thing that's like a muscle that we need to build in organizations, right? Because even the childcare factor, right? Some people absolutely love working from home and being around their kids. I mean, I would say that for myself, but I have teenagers and they can go make their own lunch, right? So I definitely feel bad for people who have little kids. You know, I cannot even imagine having to deal with that. But and so other people, you know, are desperate to come back to the office just to get away from, you know, all of that, like trying to do everything at once. But you're going to have multiple needs, you know, in your own workforce around all of these things.
Yeah. And I think that stresses that importance around understanding what's going on in your organization on the macro level. So those like wider cultural studies, understanding the general needs. And that actually brings us to our next stat that we pulled. We did a quick poll, is really understanding. So from an organizational standpoint, understanding how much of your workforce wants to return, how do they want to engage with their teams? How do they want to engage with their managers? But then also really educating and empowering the managers to have more of that personal relationship and the right conversations with their teams. And so in one of our survey questions, we asked, you know, which of the following are the most important for you in your individual meetings with your manager? And borrowing from, you know, some of Kelly's research, one of the items that we put in there is asking me how well I'm balancing job and family demands. And 49%, it was the highest chosen item. 49% of the respondents selected that one. And it was interesting because to me, I would traditionally think that in one-on-ones with a manager, those kinds of questions are a lot less likely. Our other items that we put in were, you know, checking in on the progress of my work assignments, asking me about my career goals, asking if I have the right bandwidth to handle the work that I have. Checking in on the progress of work assignments came in second at 46%. So 49% for, you know, balancing job and family demands, 46 for checking in on progress of work assignments, and then asking about career goals and the bandwidth, you know, we're almost like distant third and fourth at 30% and 22%. And so that really, I think, to me in some way was encouraging because it showed that the expectations are shifting a little bit. And it showed that people are saying, yes, I do want to have that conversation with my manager. Yes, I do want to bring my whole self to work. And I do think that there is an ability for me to be able to balance that and be able to have those transparent conversations, that it's not, oh, you know, I have 3-4 kids at home. I have all of these competing demands, but it's on me to figure that out. Like, it's not my leader's responsibility to know. It's not my leader's responsibility to accommodate. But wow, there are just, I think, some really easy things that when somebody's leader, manager is aware of a person's situation, or maybe talking about that flexibility, talking about specific core hours, implementing the buddy system, that it can actually make the person's life so much easier to balance everything. And in turn, it'll make a person less stressed out, more productive. I mean, there's just incredible trickle effect. So it was encouraging to really see that answer come out above the more traditional things that you would think would happen in a one-on-one conversation with a manager.
Yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised, right? I wasn't mm-hmm. sure. And to your point, like, I am wondering if that's changing. So, you know, for me, I used to be what we'd call like a segmenter. And I did come into work today just so that my three elementary age girls wouldn't run into the office and my dog wouldn't start barking during this podcast. But, you know, I used to always just have to come to the office. I have to come to the office to get my work done. And COVID kind of flipped that upside down. Yeah. Now, my husband, he's always worked from home. And he used to, you know, if he got interrupted on a call with a client, by the kids or the dog, he was like, oh, this is frustrating. But now I think it's become more acceptable or more normalized, right? Yeah. And I'm noticing here at Purdue, people are asking, how's everything going? How's your family doing? That didn't happen a lot before. We're very much, we kind of independent contractors. We come in, do our research and do our teaching, and we work, you know, in our offices. And oftentimes who we collaborate with aren't at our universities. They're at others, you know? And so we do a lot of the, you know, remote work that way. But it's been interesting to see that shift and see more people yeah. asking. And especially people who, like Maddie, you were saying, you know, your kids are a little bit older, so it's different. And I can't imagine, I mean, Sonia, your son's even younger than my girls, like the ones with really little ones that needed, yeah. you know, more during this time. But people are asking, and especially people who are like have older kids and say, you know, I kind of forgot what it was like, but this made me really think and empathize, you know, yeah. with all the different, you know, levels of, you know, COVID and what that meant. And so, you know, I was pleasantly surprised to see that. And then it's, you know, what that research that you asked, Sonia, that you just showed is saying is that, you know, employees, you know, want their managers to ask about these things yeah. and that this should be kind of a normal part of the conversation, which Ellen, my colleague, and I have been kind of saying for years and hoping that we can move in. Right. So it's great.
It only took a pandemic to build some empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's like, it was interesting what you were saying, Kel, too, that like today you're in your office and I'm, you know, keep looking over my shoulder to be like, oh, please don't let my, you know, almost 3-year-old run in. Please don't let it, like, hopefully the cartoons aren't on too loud. And it's, but I'm also working from my parents' house. Like, that was my flexibility to say, you know, work from anywhere and practicing that. And I think that, you know, one of the other things that your research highlighted is to be a good role model. And I think that there is a time and a place and things that are appropriate for every one of us. And I think to exercise that, and like you said, like, you can work from home and it's fine, but you also, it was relatively easy for you to go in the office and have a peace of mind and not worry that your entire family, you know, could flood it in at any point, which your girls are just the most adorable. Your husband's lovely. Your dog's the cutest. It would be wonderful to have any of them as a part of a podcast. But I understand that maybe that would be a different episode.
Right.
Different kind of topic. So today you exercise that ability to say, well, I don't need to stay at home and wonder if all of this is going to happen, if I could just go over to my office and have that peace of mind. And so I think that for all of us to continue to talk about that and say that whatever choices, we're making choices because they're the right ones for us, and to make sure that something that's right for us and somebody else has a different preference, that it's okay. It is our own individual preferences. We're every day, probably almost every hour, we're making a choice around how to show up, where to show up. But as much as we can communicate that to our teams, be as real as possible and say, like, ah, you know, maybe I chose this and it was a great decision, or I chose that, and, or, you know, next time when I have a redo, or if I could have a redo, I would do it differently. And this is why, humanize ourselves as much as possible. I think that's a big part of being that role model today, is that we're all learning, we're all evolving. A lot of us are doing some kind of soul searching to see, where do we want to go from here, right? That's what the pandemic opened up. And it said there's more people than ever before probably reflecting on who do they want to be and what do they want out of life. And so as long as we're making, staying true to ourselves, being transparent to others, I think it's, that's the role model we need to be. It's not like in the past when you think like, oh no, I'm going to show up to the office every day and I'm going to be the first one there. And I'm going to like, no, that's totally out the window. I feel like that's like the, maybe like the Mad Men era, even at this point, it feels like it was so long ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. So hopefully, you know, we get to this, you know, ability to have that flexibility that we know is important and can help people juggle everything that's going on and hopefully help them manage, you know, their stress and burnout a bit more. And that's, you know, that's the world we're hoping to see. And something happened, you know, this global pandemic kind of really, you know, instigated that at a faster rate. So I'm very curious to see kind of, you know, where this goes and to keep studying these things and see how it evolves.
Yeah. Well, and thank you. Thank you for doing the work that you do. Thank you for being so intentional, so detailed about your recommendations, about your insights. I think that the more people can take that in, the more they can understand what are the options out there, what's important for me to think about, what are other people thinking about collectively, we'll all do better. And to your point, it is so encouraging to see things moving. And not everything can move at once. And we need to be patient and we need to keep doing this work. But I think that we are seeing some differences, and we'll continue collectively to study those, to measure them, to put out the good word. But it was so incredibly nice to have you with us today. Thank you so much for the insights. Again, thank you for all the work. We'll share some more information online and some additional references and all of these great stats. But it was such a pleasure to have you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for inviting me. Well, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed this so much. Oh. Thank you.
All right. And we're out.